Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam. Oh, no, let's try it again. I'm It's been that kind of week, guys.
We have so much to talk about, including, like, follow-up on things we discussed last week, like Skeleton Crew. Wow, what a third episode.
Yeah. Why don't we just, like, you know what, we can do like a brief 5 minutes of that, because I mean, I think we both agree it's like, wow, Jude Law, he can do the Star Wars like better than anybody like in the recent era, like including Pedro Pascal, like at least that's to me.
Here's what I really, really appreciated is that you got that two episode premiere and you are kind of left with the mystery of who he is and what he can really do. Yeah. And they very, very quickly, like, come to the forefront with all that. So yes. I like that they didn't draw a lot of that out. And not to again bring up Agatha, but it kind of felt like the Billy stuff in Agatha, where it's like, yeah, you all know what we're doing here. We're not going to play super coy with all of it. So, you know, there's still a little mystery there, but yeah, it's just, it's so well done. And I listened to, I won't say the podcast, but I listened to a podcast this week where one of the hosts derided the show.
Was it that show? The show that it was like you actually listened to it? Wow. Okay. Oh, what did they have to say? I'm very curious.
Just about how it's like derivative of things, like the Goonies and like why can't Star Wars? It goes back to the like nobody hates Star Wars fans like Star Wars fans, and it's just become apparent that people aren't gonna be happy, and you know, it's like you can't, it's fine if you don't like the show, but just being so down on it, which is really weird because like I also listen to the Midnight Boys and they're super positive about it. I haven't listened to any of Joanna Robinson's
and Mallory,
I know they do, and I appreciate the passion they have for the things they cover, but I really don't, I don't think I can listen to a 3-hour podcast about a show. It's a lot.
I listened to the first episode, and I mean, well, it's like, it's weird because like when Joanna is not with Mallory, like there's a different kind of Joanna, but like Mallory brings out this thing within them and they go back and forth and it becomes this thing. And I don't mind it sometimes, you know, because like every corner of geekdom is allowed to have that. Right.
I can't listen every week. So, but no. I knew they love this show. And
like the big thing that I would tell you to do is listen to the first episode that they covered it, because they have Christopher Ford and John Watts on for a 15-minute interview. And it's very enlightening because of like, it's nothing that we haven't heard them talk about before, but the way that Joanna talks to them is always like, I always find it that Joanna is a great interviewer, like a really great interviewer. That's why she was with Vanity Fair for so long, at least in my estimation. And she has a true passion for Star Wars and Marvel. So it was nice to like hear her talk to them about, like,
I don't know when that woman sleeps, because, or she just must have one of those, like, the memory of, I don't know, like a bank vault. Like, she just holds everything in, and I don't know how she does it. So
I don't either. Like she like the amount, the wealth of knowledge at her disposal, but not just that. It's the whole thing of, like, the computer. Like, is she just, she's able to translate and make leaps on things that it's just, it's a fascinating 15 minutes. It's not a wasteful 15 minutes. I would say for anybody that, like, you know, wants to hear more about Skeleton Crew and what Ford and Watts have in store, I would definitely say, because they hint at stuff, I definitely say go to the last, I think it's like the last 20 minutes of the show. So you can just fast forward to the end and listen to her interview, because it's a quite informative thing. And I kind of liked it a lot. And I'm thankful that I didn't listen to it before the Jude Law character showed up, who has many names. But yeah, just to say, and I don't know, like, so, is this one of those things where it's just going to be like, it's going to, like, because, like, I was looking also at reviews and stuff, and the way that certain people are talking. Oh, go ahead.
So part of it is, I don't understand why anyone thinks that all of something has to be specifically for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I have enjoyed at least bits of everything. Marvel and Star Wars are two big passions of mine. Mm-hmm. I've enjoyed everything they've done. I've enjoyed bits of all of the things with those names attached to them. Mm-hmm. Understanding that sometimes maybe it's not for me, and sometimes it just isn't successful. But, like, saying something, oh, well, we shouldn't be doing Goonies set in the Star Wars universe, and, like, that's just the elevator pitch. And I don't know, it felt very much like this person only watched the first episode. I'm like, you are not even watched it, but, like, from the jump of the first episode, that whole, like, 80s vibe suburb thing was immediately just like, this is what I'm judging it on. I'm like, if you got to the second episode, I don't know how you weren't like, oh shit, we're in the Star Wars universe.
Seriously. Like, as soon as you land in my favorite part is, Joanna and Mallory called it Tortuga, because it's got that heavy Pirates of the Caribbean vibe. I appreciate it. And you get to Tortuga, and it's like, it's literally everything, like, everything in that section is what Star Wars fans complain is not in Star Wars. Like,
it's like if you spent 30 minutes in the cantina scene, and I'm like, this is wonderful. This is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, episode 3 is an extension of that. And we get introduced to a new character, which, God, I won't lie, I hoped when he kept mentioning his friend that it was Maz. I was like, well, yeah, are we gonna get Maz? Like, is that what we're getting? We didn't.
Beba Frick. That's who I thought. Like, like, you know, but Maz would have been, oh my God, that would have been great. Because, I mean, center of the universe kind of cantina. Like, I mean, she's been around for, you know, quite a long time.
Yeah, knows a lot of things, is in with, you know, the scoundrels of the universe. And, it would have been really, really cool. But I appreciated the introduction of the new character. I thought clearly it's a CGI character, but it looks so well done. And, like, I mean, all of it was just, it was delightful. And it's nice to have a Star Wars thing that is not based in like the Skywalker bullshit and is also fun, because like the same person deriding it loved Andor, and I'm like, but Andor is all the things you're talking about this, but it's at the other end, whereas this is lighthearted and delightful. Andor is dire and depressing and
very much like, so.
But because you're a 50-year-old man, you're like, yeah, that. Well, I mean, if you were a 13-year-old kid, you'd be like, yes, this. Like, I don't know what that Star Wars is. That's sad.
It's depressing.
And I'm saying both things can exist. Like, why does it have to be, you know, like, Endgame exists, but so does Miss Marvel. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing at all. And that's where my umbrage comes with fandom, is that, you know, it's not your Star Wars. It's our Star Wars.
It's like, yeah, it's just Star Wars. And if somebody can do something new and unique with it, even if it is derivative of something else, then all art's derivative, man. Like, yeah. I don't know what you want. Like, we're going to talk about a couple of things. One specifically that's derivative of, like, so many things that we grew up with. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Skeleton Crew still continues to impress. Creature Commandos, like,
wow.
The first two episodes, I was... I can see this is going to be different and it could be good. The third episode is fucking spectacular.
Absolutely.
It was the thing we thought we were going to build up to, and Gunn just delivered it in episode three. And if you are not, I'm not saying full on crying, but if you're not a little like teary-eyed at the fate of G.I. Robot, possible fate of G.I. Robot, then like, I don't know, man. Even when I saw where that story was going, I was just like, they're gonna not do that. He'll back off of that. Like, it's gonna be some other pull the rug out from under you thing. It's not going to be literally that this thing was bought at a basically a yard sale by a freaking Nazi, you know, dipshit living in America. And I mean, he just full on with it. And watching G.I. Robot like realize where he is, and it's so great. But then current day stuff, when you know they find their friend, his friend Nina, and she's like, I can't get out of the water. He's like, no problem. And he just like picks up this cast iron tub and is carrying it around. It's so delightful, man. In the way only Gunn can do this, just like, it's sweet and sad, but also sadistic. And nobody does that like him, man.
I was talking to somebody about this, and I made a comp to him, and the person really didn't like it because they're classic Hollywood. But I'm going to say it here because I feel like it's very true, which is that I feel like with Creature Commandos, more than anything, it made me realize James Gunn is literally our modern day Billy Wilder, because that's how Billy Wilder worked. That's how he operated. The sour and the sweet always together, right? Because the sour is just a little bit more heartbreaking and the sweet is just a little bit more sweeter, however fleeting it is. And that's what James Gunn operates under. And if you've watched anything from Billy Wilder, like, there's a huge cynicism to it, but there's also this optimism. And he and he knew how to balance tone. And I feel like James Gunn does that. Creature Commandos feels like unfettered, unfiltered. Like, this is the thing that he's been waiting to do. And like G.I. Robot, this episode is just like kind of like the perfect distillation of what Gunn does better than anybody. And it's not even like, I'm not even talking like just in the superhero world. I'm talking about like just in film in general, the way
that if you go watch his non-superhero stuff, you can see that really, really come to light. If only because I know he didn't have complete creative control in everything, but he definitely didn't have it with Marvel. Or it's hard to say he didn't have it. He knew he had to operate within the parameters of, this is Marvel and it's owned by Disney and it has to be, somewhat family friendly. And he had to color inside the lines. And now watching him take properties and color outside those lines is a lot of fun. And it's going to be interesting to see him rein that back in for the bigger, bigger properties like Superman. Mm-hmm. We know it's going to have to be more in line with like Guardians. I'm sure there'll be some cynicism and typical Gunn things in there, but it's going to have to be more of a middle America narrative,
Yeah, but Gunn also grew up in, like, I mean, this is the thing that I feel like people don't know. He grew up in the heart of America. Like, he grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. You don't get more center middle Midwestern than St. Louis, Missouri. I mean, all you have to do is watch Parenthood, like a movie that's about St. Louis, Missouri, and you understand where he comes from. And like, I think that like he's at a point now where like all of the work that he's done, it's going to be really interesting. Like the Creature Commandos gives me like, it doesn't give me pause. It adds another color into his paintbrush, his tool set, where I'm like, he gets, like, I think that we've always understood that he gets monsters because, you know, the Suicide Squad was kind of like about monsters, but like, and so, like, you know, like if you've seen one of his first films, oh God, what is it called? Slither. You understand Slither.
At Rocket and Groot.
Exactly. And
the way he handles those characters with such care. Uh-huh. He gets the outsider thing. Mm-hmm. And watching him put those characters through those paces and knowing he understands what that means, it's pretty special.
Absolutely. I like, if you guys are not watching this, please like, do yourself a favor. Don't do us a favor. Don't do him a favor. Do yourself a favor, because this is like some of the, like, you know, this is like some really great writing that's happening on this show within three episodes. And it's not like oh, you kind of like, one is kind of, I no, he hits the ground running. Like, it's
yeah,
like,
it really does. The third episode is such a jewel, though. I really don't know. Like, can it get better than this third episode? I mean, I hope that it can. I know he can still do great work, but it's like, man, I don't know if he's gonna be able to top that.
But I mean, also, like, let's be honest, this is the midway point into this series, because there's only seven episodes. So he had to kind of hit the, like, I feel like, so like, we already know the structure. So we're going through each one of these people. So like the first was kind of introducing us to everybody, but then it kind of gets to.
We got the bride in the second episode, and we got. So, G.I. Robot in this episode, and I'm out. I don't know who we'll get in the next one.
I feel like we're going to get, what's his name? Because it's called Chasing Squirrels, I think, and the way that
It'll be Weasel. It'll be Weasel.
Yeah. You know, and we'll kind of go, we'll move forward from there. We'll get Nina, probably Dr. Phosphorus. And then eventually we'll get Randall Flagg or Randall Flagg Sr. To which, you know, this is going to be very exciting. I really do. I wasn't looking forward to this for some reason. I don't know why. Like it was just kind of like, okay. Like, you know, but now that I'm in it, I'm like, holy shit, this is like, I fucking love this. Like, I'm looking, like, I literally, when I get off of work, it's the first thing that I watch on Thursday.
This year has been, it's definitely been a year of like things I didn't expect to love, not things mm-hmm. I was prepared to dislike, just didn't expect to love. Agatha, Penguin, Creature Commandos, Skeleton Crew. Like, I didn't expect to, like, hate those things. It's just, you know, it's been a few years of, like, it's been kind of a letdown. I didn't expect to love them as much as I've loved them. So, I mean, they still got to stick the landing on two of those things. But we're off to such a good start, I feel like. There's no way that they don't stick the landing. So, I mean, we'll see come sometime in January. I got a chance to watch something else because apparently it dropped on Paramount Plus early. And I just happened to see it. And I was like, you know, I'm kind of interested. So I watched it last night and... So, tomorrow night's the official premiere on Showtime of Dexter Original Sin, the prequel series to the Dexter show. This show is bad. It's very bad.
I was going to talk to you offline about it, like, because I was curious, because my wife is curious, and I was like, you know, let's just talk and see if we want to cover it. You've already given me my answer, because the trailers make it look like, okay, this could be like either the best kind of prequel possible or the worst prequel possible. And it sounds like it's the worst.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed Dexter. I did botch the ending. The sequel series that lasted all the one season didn't help. I didn't even make it through that. This does reference the end of that. So if you don't know how that ends, this kind of spoils it. But it also spoils the fact that Dexter is coming back for yet another sequel series next year called Dexter Resurrection. This feels like a bunch of people playing dress up, because all of the characters you know from the original series are here, but none of those actors. But then they get people to try to dress up and look like them. The only person in this, only saw the first episode, but I don't think I'll watch anymore, unless I'm just really bored. The only person doing any real acting in this show, and the only reason I might continue to watch it here and there, is Christian Slater. He's good. He's really good. But he's always really good. I mean, he's Christian Slater, but he's always kind of just Christian Slater. But he's doing, like, some solid, good work here. Everybody else feels like they went back and watched film on what the other actors did in the original series. And we're like, okay, we're just going to pretend to be those people. With like, it just feels awkward and weird. It's like, Sarah Michelle Gellar is in it.
What?
She's okay, but she's only got a couple of scenes. But she's playing. She's going to be playing kind of a mentor to him, as far as like the crime scene photography thing goes. Like that's what she does. So, you know, I kind of see where they're going with that. But Patrick Dempsey, I used to think that maybe, like, I think we slept on Patrick Dempsey. Like, he was really good in the 80s, and he fell out, and, like, he made had his comeback with Grey's Anatomy. Like, maybe he's a really good actor. No, he's not. He's not. He's not. We were all right. He's not a good actor. He's terrible in this.
I feel like this sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, this sounds like a, like, so I am deathly allergic to fan films because.
Yes. It feels like a fan film. Yes.
Like there's one out there right now that I've watched and I literally wanted to throw my phone at my screen when I saw it. It's the Batman Beyond Year One because it's just terrible. Like, and I hate knocking people, but like, I'm going to tell people something. Perspective, like fans or perspective filmmakers, if you have to put all your fucking money into a fan-made film about something, you are doing it fucking wrong. No, it doesn't work. I'm sorry. You cannot use a property to make a film. Like, you have to do this on your own. You have to create an original concept because it's the only way that you're going to get through. Like, I don't care what you do and how much production design and how clever you are. Like, it doesn't work. It never works. I don't care. I don't care if Legacy Studios is involved with your bullshit. It doesn't work. It never works. I don't understand. I just literally, like, and that's what this feels like.
I would say it rarely works. I don't know if I'd say it never works. Dan Trachtenberg started his career with fan films.
Yes, but he did. But I mean, like, let's be honest, Dan always did the, it wasn't the most obscure, but it was never the most obvious things that he would do. Like he did, like his, like the thing that he brought, like the thing that got him all of his jobs, let's be honest, is Portal film, right? And at the time, Portal was big, but it wasn't.
It's not mainstream. It's not making a Batman fan film. He had what, the Portal one, and then was it like a Robotech one or something? Or
I think it was a Gundam.
Something like that. Yeah.
But
he's also a guy that he didn't work in those industries, but he worked covering those industries. So he had connections with people. So it was kind of done, maybe not with their blessing, but certainly not with you know, like kind of like, like we're not gonna bother you, and you know, got a little help where he needed it, and this definitely feels like a Dexter fan film, and it's kind of I feel bad for Christian Slater, I really do, because I don't think this will make it past the first season. And
yeah, that's not good. That's really not good. I mean, like, what do you do when something like because they've already filmed the sequel series, right? Or they're starting to, like, what happens when something like this goes so terribly awry?
I don't know. I mean, it's definitely a concept that you can, if it only lasts the one season, you can kind of reconfigure and be like, Well, that's all we were ever going to tell. It's literally about him joining the police force as the forensic photographer, whatever job it was that he
had. Yeah.
Like, that's the first episode ends with him joining the police force. So that's what it's about. So, yeah, I can see where you could just build up to, you know, the season finale. It becomes a series finale, and Harry dies, and that's the, like, he has a heart, Harry has a heart attack in the first episode. That's who Christian Slater is playing, their dad.
Okay.
So
yeah, James Remar.
He does a good approximate, like, he's not doing James Remar, but he does do the, like, he has that kind of presence that Remar
that
had.
That kind of police. Yeah, Remar always had that, like, authoritative, like, thing, the policeman kind of thing. Like, you can't not, like, when you look at him, you're like, he's either a cop or a criminal, and I don't know which, but he always plays one. So, yeah, no, I get it. Okay. All right. Well.
Yeah, unfortunately, this just isn't good. I don't know what they're thinking. A way more interesting concept would be raising the, because, like, if you know the story, he adopted the kid.
Like, yes, he did.
As a kid, not as a 16-year-old, not as a child,
mm-hmm.
and kind of guided him through this darkness. And that's an interesting story. This is just the original series, only he's 19 instead of 28 or whatever he was when that show started. It's not, I don't know. Unless you're just some kind of super fan, or you just gotta know whatever, I think this is best avoided. So maybe they can save the franchise with another sequel series that comes out next year. But I don't know. I really doubt it. So
yeah, like, once there's blood in the water, there's really no, like, to me at least, like, unless you're a storied, like, franchise like Star Wars, where there's more to go with it and more places to go, even though your fandom just wants you to stay in two or three lanes, they don't care about anything else. It's one of those things where it's just like,
that's the thing. Dexter, like, doesn't have enough lanes to veer in and out of things. It's just, it's a one note thing that. Uh-huh. Like, if you can play that note, a la, like, a show like Supernatural, like, yeah, you can do it successfully for a really long time, but you got to really know how to play that note. And, the show itself lost so much in the last, like, two seasons.
Oh, God,
I don't know why anybody would have faith that they could do it again. Like, the only real, like, thing to do with this IP is to not, if you're going to reboot, it's like, clean reboot, redo everything. Don't, I like Michael C. Hall, but just get away from all of that. Redo the whole thing. But, you know, it's kind of, he's synonymous with it, and I think he has a love and appreciation for it and what kind of it did for him. So maybe he just wants to be involved. I don't know. It's bizarre to me that they keep going back to this well, but here we are. So
yeah.
You want to talk about some video game stuff? Because
yes,
we both did watch Secret Level, and that is video game based.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And let's talk some video games. Let's. Why don't we talk about the Secret Level and I've watched all, them all. You have not. You've gotten most of them done. You got 5 out of the 8, and there's 15 episodes, and they're all just basically the concept is that the same animation studio that did Love and Robots is tackling different universes or different different games and making short films out of them. And some are more successful than the others, but all of them, what I can say about all 8 that we've gotten so far, because I've played most of the things except for maybe 2, Crossfire and New World, Once in Future King. I do not know either one of those, but what I can safely say is that they stay in the params of the game, with the exception of one, and we'll talk about that one, that I feel like it stays in the param, but the style is completely wild and bonkers. But for the most part, like, they get the, they like, each of these episodes understands what the game itself is about and kind of gives you a, it feels like, for most part, they feel like they give you a taste of the world that the game is created in. And it's almost like, I know it sounds really crass, but it's not. It's the most artful version of it. It's like a giant trailer for the games.
Yeah, I think that that's pretty on point. And
yeah,
that works really well. Like, the first episode is a Dungeons and Dragons thing.
Yeah,
and it does work really well, and it kind of, like, you leave it wanting to, like, play in that world more, and mm-hmm. almost all of them do that.
Yeah,
and that's great.
Absolutely,
the ones that are excellent are the ones that don't do that.
Yes, the ones that go off
too specifically.
Okay, so I feel like we both agree Pac-Man is probably the one that goes the way the
goes. It made that game so depressing.
Yes, it did. And then I feel like for me, Unreal Tournament, but I also feel like the Unreal Tournament was probably my favorite.
Unreal Tournament was really, really good. Yeah, I do agree with you, but I did feel like at the end of that one, I was like, oh, well, I haven't played fighting games in a while. I would like to play some fighting games. New World was the other New one World. For me, where it's like, it's such a singular kind of story.
It's very loopy.
Yeah, it isn't necessarily based on the game. I mean, none of them are really based on the game narrative, but it's just this weird story of, like, you know, friendship and like letting go of your own ego, and like it's just really fun and funny, and hearing Arnold kind of be this version of himself was really enjoyable. I really dug that episode, but I do think the three best ones are the ones I watched were definitely New World, Unreal Tournament, and Pac-Man.
Yeah, I will say
I watched some of Warhammer. I didn't make it all the way through it though.
Man, that one was just fucking wild. I will say, like, okay, so like New World, the Once in Future King, like. And this is something I'm going to mention later on about something that I just watched, which is that it's really nice to see Arnold in something where he's allowed to be charming and funny, but in his own way, charming. Like, it works to his benefit, right? Like, the thing that I loved about it is that you when you hear his voice, you instantly know who this character is. And because he himself knows who this is, and he's allowed to just relax and be that particular character. And there's a charm that I don't think has been present in Arnold's work in a long time here.
Yeah.
And I know, like, but I also think it's also because it's only 15 minutes and yeah. it's maximum Arnold, right? Like, it literally, like, you know, the whole concept of this guy who's a conqueror and is like, but is hiding a secret. Like, we find out, like, at the end, and it's a, it shifts into something different. I loved it. Like, I really did love, like, just like Arnold having the time of his life. And I will say that there's another one that you haven't watched yet. The Armor Corps one with Keanu, where yeah. the best version of Keanu, I feel, is the one that's just a little bit of a punk ass. That, like, you know, like, for me, like, Keanu's always been at his best when he's kind of like that speed Neo character, a guy who is just that side, other side of authority, that he's just like, fuck you guys, I don't fucking need you. And they give him a role here that you don't at first think is that, but it totally is that. And it just allows him to be like the maximum of what Keanu can be. I liked it a lot. I like the series a lot for what it's doing. It's not heavy. Like, and I know that this is going to sound like an insult, but it's not. It's in the best way possible. It's advertisement. Like it is literally what Amazon, like what I fear Amazon is going to turn into, which it kind of already is, and fuck them. But it's some really great advertising. Like, for those games, like, even if they go way off base, it's still an advertising for Pac-Man, right?
Yeah.
But if we look at it and we look at what it's doing, it's literally telling you what these things are kind of at their core, they're about. But then also, it's also like, I guess it's kind of like for fans of these things, to which I'm only a fan of like three of them. Like, I mean, I've never been a Pac-Man fan, but I mean, like, you know, I wasn't there for the Pac-Man craze, right? I knew of Pac-Man. I know the animated series. I know Pac-Man. I know everything about it. It just, I didn't interact with it, right? I'm more of a Mario guy, and we'll talk about Mario in a second. But Sifu, Armored Core, and Dungeons and Dragons, I am a fan of, right? And At their core, they did exactly what they were supposed to do. They kind of lived in the world. They set the params for the world, with the exception of Pac-Man. And they kind of gave you a slice of what these things are like. Like, Crossfire. Like, I can't wait for you to watch Crossfire just as an action film fan. Because it's literally, the concept is that they're trying to get an asset from point A to point B. But it's set in a town that looks like Miami, that's at the cusp of a hurricane. And so, like, it's like a giant, like, it looks like a $150 million action movie that they could never do in real life, because it, like, it feels like it's like both Michael Mann and Michael Bay, who had a bastard child because of the hurricane and how much, like, shit is going on, but also, like, the technical sharpness of a Michael Mann action film, or action scene. It's good, but I don't know Crossfire, and I don't know if this is the kind of thing that they do, is like, it's an environmental thing, but it's wild. It looked, like I said, it looks like a, like, it's the thing that you go, ah, that's why they did it in animation, because you can't do a live action version of this because it would cost too much money. But in the confines of a computer, 18 minutes is 18 minutes. It doesn't matter what you put in there and how deep you go. This cost is still there. It's just the rendering time, however long it takes to render it. Thank you, James Cameron, for teaching me that, is that doesn't matter. All it is rendering time and how much time you have to render things. Like, just as an example, I know for a fact that, they began sometime last year with rendering on Avatar Ash and Fire, even though it's still 2 years away, like, it's a year and a half away. That's how deep the, like, how complex rendering is and how much time it takes. It's kind of like Bitcoin, where you're mining data. But anywho, like, I got way off base.
Crossfire is interesting in that, like, I'm sure it has players, but it's more well known outside of the U.S. Like, it was huge in China. Like, there have been like films based on the franchise in China, and so yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Of note, none that have been released in the U.S. Do you want to know why? Because they're so anti-American. They are so I have a friend that lives outside of the U.S. and he get like our like kind of connection is Hong Kong action films and stuff and Chinese action films, like a marsh, like just literally Asian cinema. And he's told me about these. I didn't realize that they were these films because they go by different names, but they're based off of the thing, the property. And there's a whole section of like these huge movies that in China make like literally $500 million, and they're action movies.
In 2020, there was a Crossfire series that was released on a Chinese streaming service. It had 1.7 billion views by October of 2020.
And they're, like I said, they are very anti-American. Like, they're very, very anti-American. Like, they're, like, they, like, the Americans are the bad guys. Like that's the thing. Like, there's a, like, so it's wild. Like, I knew that much. I just didn't realize that this was that. But interesting enough, like, it works. Like, all of these things work. I was genuinely surprised at how much they worked and how successful they were at what, like, I guess I didn't know what the concept was. And then when I realized, like, Dungeons and Dragons is the first one that you watch, like, or you should watch, because it really does set the table very plainly about how this series is going to go. And now that I know, it's kind of interesting because I'm kind of curious how they're going to do Mega Man, how they're going to do God of War, Uncharted, because there are series that, like, the second half is, like, it feels like the first half was just the taste, but the second half is what we really want. Like, it's the big titles that they had. So, like, they hooked me enough. I mean, you know, like I said, it was an easy 2 hours because they're all anywhere between 15 to 20 minutes. And there's 8 of them that have been released. They're beautiful. They're, like the first thing I thought about, I don't know about you, is I was like, I kind of want a 4K disc of these. Like, I want them uncompressed and just kind of be able to watch them. To which, like, you know, it's kind of, I think that gamers are really going to like it, but I also think that non-gamers might actually kind of have an entryway into the reasons why, like, people are, like, this kind of made me feel like, like, they kind of get why we like why I like gaming. New World, the Once and Future King, like, that literally is kind of like a gamer put into
die and respawn.
It's like Pac-Man is also the other way, but it's also the addiction of it. You know what I mean? The guy that spends, like, you know, 22 hours of his life on WoW and needs to decompress because it's all boring and it's the same thing that you're doing. Eat to live, live to eat. I was gonna ask, like, you found that one the best. Like, what did you?
Pac-Man definitely was. I think the best, only because it was such a deconstruction of what that game was. And I know that probably wasn't the assignment. The assignment was just like, hey, pick a video game and what, you know, and whoever, I didn't even look to see who the creative team behind it was, but was like, what if we do Pac-Man and what if we deconstruct it and make it the most, like, thought-provoking thing about Pac-Man that has ever existed. And it floored me. I was just like, I would have never thought to do this with a property like Pac-Man.
No, never. Like, that was so surprising. But speaking of gaming, you have been playing a game, and I have been playing a game, but I'm actually very curious about your game because it's a remaster, but also, but like, remaster in quotes, but it's also a game that I never played when it was initially released. And you kind of want to talk about the game and what it is and your experience with it?
Yeah, so I picked up Super Mario RPG on the Switch really cheap a couple of weeks ago. And I started playing it. And if you're a fan of all of the Mario RPG things that this spawned, then I think it's definitely something you should go back and play. Like, all of the turn-based strategy games, like the Mario and Luigi Superstar games, all of that stuff kind of starts with this game.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the way you should probably play it, because it looks phenomenal.
That's what I was asking you. Like, I was like, you were like, we were talking about it, and one of the things that I was very curious about was not just how it looked, but the speed at which it played. Like, like, was it a true remaster where they did a little bit of graphic upgrades and also engine upgrades, which is always the thing that I look for in anything, is an engine upgrade. Make it a little bit faster, a little bit more modern, because graphics are graphics, right? But the engine itself, if they can kind of just get a little bit more out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I never played the original, so I can't speak too much on that. But like, I've watched some, because I've gotten stuck in a couple of places and I've had to go back and watch. Watch some walkthroughs, and it certainly looks a lot better, and it looks like it plays a little bit better. My one real complaint, and it's only a complaint because I played everything that came after, so going back to this feels really slow. Like, the story unfolds extremely slow. And those, which is weird, because those other games unfold pretty slow as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that this game has that at least I don't remember in a lot of those other games, like Paper Mario, and is an option for you to play. And this might be new to the Switch. There's an option for basically you to play on easy mode, and it just levels up your character super fast, so that you're not having to like grind and grind and grind. And I know there are people out there who want to do the grind, but like, this is a remaster of an old game. I don't want to commit 400 hours to grinding out and leveling up my Mario characters. I kind of just want to play the story and have a good time. I chose the easy mode. So that's sped it up a little bit. But the story still does feel a little too slow at times. There's also several places where you lack any real clear direction on what it is you're supposed to do. But also part of that could be me constantly pressing the A button to get through all of the text-based dialogue, because I don't want to read it. Like, I just want the gist of it. If you played any of those Mario RPG games, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Some of those characters go on for pages and pages explaining their story. And honestly, after I pressed A twice, I stopped caring. I'm just like, oh God, I don't care. Like, just tell me what it is I'm supposed to do and I'll go do it.
What I find fascinating is that this game was initially released back in November of last year. And it was just a limited run, and it sold out so quickly, and the demand was so high that eventually Nintendo, which they normally don't do, They just kind of usually just live to this wayward side. They were forced to actually reprint this and start to like actually have like actually massively produce this because it was so popular. Because there's a couple of other Mario games that they released that were like limited and people wanted them on the Switch because it was easy to like, you know, because, you know, it's, like it's a Mario game. And they never did that, but this one was so popular and the demand was so high that they that they started to reprint it. So I mean, I'm very curious. Like, I'm not.
Yeah, at one point it was like I think like several hundred dollars to get a copy, and then they like you said, they went back to the well, and then we had, you know, $60 copies out there again, and I just lucked into a $20 copy of this game and couldn't pass it up for $20 and I'm kind of really, really enjoying it. I also recently finished, I don't think I talked about this, Kirby Return to Dreamland.
No, you did not? Okay.
Yeah. It's the first Kirby game I've ever like played all the way through. It's a lot of fun. It's pretty short for what it is. So much like the Peach game or Captain Toad's game, like they're very, very short. So I don't think they're worth plopping down $60 for, because you can, I mean, if you wanted to, you could burn through it in a day. Certainly over a weekend. So I don't know if $60 is the way to go, but if you can find a good deal on any of those games, like Kirby's a lot of fun. Like you get all these cool little superpowers depending on which villain, you know, you suck up as your Kirby. And yeah, it was a pretty good little platforming experience. And I only, you know how I play for 15 minutes at a time, so it only took me about a week or a week and a half to get through the game, playing it at 10 or 15 minute clips every day. So yeah, it's very, very short. There's an online component to it, and there's also like mini games in it, so it does have added value, but the story itself is extremely short. So so you've been playing Indiana Jones.
Yes, I have. Punch a Nazi, Indiana Jones. It's interesting. Bethesda is the one that actually created and designed this game, and I mention that because it is a big factor in this game, because I never thought that I wanted a first-person shooter for Indiana Jones, nor did I need one. But playing Indiana Jones in the Golden Circle, very much so.
Actually get to shoot? Does he carry his gun? Okay, cool.
Yeah, he does. There's,
I know, if it's like a first-person whip.
You know? Like it's very interesting. The concept, like, I love the concept that I didn't realize because the trailer didn't really give you anything. So like what ends up happening is that the game opens with a replay of the first 10 minutes of Raiders of the Lost Ark. You like go through the whole thing, the Paramount logo, like, you know, the Paramount Mountain. And you walk through and stuff, and it's just the entryway into like showing you how the controllers work and everything, right? And the kind of level of the kind of gameplay that you're going to be doing, some puzzle solving and stuff like that. It was a lot of fun. What I did not realize is this is a direct sequel. Like this takes place 1 year after Raiders. Like so it fills that gap in, because Temple of Doom takes place 2 years before. As everybody is aware that it's a prequel, and then Last Crusade takes place 3 years later in 1939, and then, like, you know, then the other movies are whatever they are, right? But this is like a direct sequel to Raiders.
They didn't make any other movies, Adam. What are you talking about?
What are we talking about? What are we talking about? Like, only three.
We had fun with the last one. I shouldn't say that.
Yes. No, we did. We really did. And I will tell you, like, rewatching it in 4K, they must have done work post-work on that, because, man, it looks so much better. The de-aging of Harrison Ford looks so much better on 4K than it did in the theaters. And maybe it's just because of smaller screen and better compression, but I don't know. But it looks so much better. But that's besides the point. This one is like, there's like, I'm only about 3 or 4 hours into gameplay, because I like to fuck around and really kind of get my bearings on things. Get to shoot, whip, beat up people. Like, it's the whole thing. But what I didn't realize was just how clever the game is and how it goes from first person shooter into cinematics and really kind of gets the tone of Spielberg circa 1982, 1983, like shot selection, like even the, like D. Bradley Baker, who plays Indiana Jones, gets the voice right, gets the tone right. And it's just a lot of fun. It really does feel like an Indiana Jones adventure. You grab torches, like literally you grab torches and light them up. You use your whip. You solve puzzles. The puzzles are not easy, but not hard. They just take a little bit of like concentration and remembering certain things. So like with certain games, like I'll have a little note. I know it sounds stupid, but I'll have a little notepad with me, because sometimes like it's about numbers and you don't want to go back into the screen where the number is. Yeah. So I'll just write the number, right? It's stuff like that, or like positions of things. Like it'll give you like simple riddles that very easily, if you just read it, you go, oh, okay, that means that's position 5. So you write that down and then you just kind of move on. But it's quite enjoyable. Like I said, like I did not expect myself to like my first thing was, oh man, it's a first person shooter. Fuck that. But I happen to like Bethesda's first person shooters. So I'm not I didn't know if I was going to like this or not, but I do really like this. Like eventually, like there's a lot of punching going on in this first part of it, but I'm also trying to find this thing to unlock the next stage. So like I'm going around Italy hitting Italian fascists. I mean, and they're literally labeled as Italian fascists. And so it's a lot of fun. It's just like, it's a lot of like what you would expect from an Indiana Jones like thing, which is a lot of fun, a lot of punching, a lot of like puzzle solving and using your whip to like swing across like different various areas. So,
one of the reviews I read said it was the third or fourth best Indiana Jones story ever told. And I was like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, like I could definitely see that. I could definitely see that, because it's like it's unfolding the way that you would think that an Indiana Jones film would unfold. Like that's the thing. It's like, and the best part is that they don't make Marcus Brody a fool. You get to spend time with Marcus, and like it kind of sets the table for where Henry is, or where Indiana is. Like he's just broken up with Marion. You know, after the events of Raiders, like, you know, he's back at college doing the thing. Like Tony Todd is in it playing a giant, like playing an Italian. And it, like, it very much like feels like they're like, Robert Langdon, fuck you. This is Indiana Jones territory, because it's like very much like Catholic. Like the first part is like Catholic church giant, like, you know, like instead of like a Da Vinci Code, like crazy pale monk, it's like Tony Todd is a giant like Catholic like protector priest, and it's very much Tony Todd. Like you can tell it's Tony Todd. So there's that. It's a lot of fun. Like I'm genuinely having a lot of fun with it. It's on Game Pass, which I always find it very weird that Xbox, like their biggest titles are always on Game Pass. And that's why I have an Xbox. Like I have an Xbox. I have the newest version of the Xbox, but it's an all digital version. And I just have the Game Pass. That's all. Because most of their games get released. Like, the last three games I've played were major platformers, and they were all on Game Pass. Helldivers 2, Starfield, and now Indiana Jones. And I will tell you, playing three games a year, or paying even two games a year, pays for Game Pass, because Game Pass is like, I think it's $10 a month. So all I need to do is play two new games, and I've already paid for it. And so, it's on Game Pass. So if you have an all digital Xbox and you have Game Pass, there's nothing that says you can't play it. Like, and it's there's no lag, there's no nothing. Like, I do love that about, like, Xbox. I feel like has cornered the market on, like, their digital versions. Like I'm always leery of buying PS digitals because they always feel like they lag. That's why I always buy physical copies with PS. But Xbox, man, they just know.
Yeah.
And they release all of their, like, literally, like, all of their new shit is always on, with the exception of the sports games. I will say that. EA, EA always is a bunch of greed fuckers, will never, ever release. Like, they're always the last year. So, like, if you want to play Madden 23, you can play it on Game Pass. But if you want 24 or NBA 2K24, good luck with that, because you're going to have to actually go through. You're going to actually have to purchase it. But I'm not a big sports gamer. So
me either.
Doesn't matter.
I haven't been since PS2. So, So I've got two things one more thing we haven't even talked about that I started watching yesterday, and I wound up burning through four episodes. And one thing that, I watched, so there's a new show on Netflix called No Good Deed.
Yes, that is actually something we're going to be watching this weekend, because
with a phenomenal cast. I won't say much about it since you're going to watch it, but it has a really, really great cast. Linda Cardellini, Dennis Leary, Lisa Kudrow,
Ray Romano,
Luke Wilson. It's just great.
Yeah,
it's very dark.
Okay, good to know.
Very funny, but funny because it's dark. Kind of think. What's the name of that movie where they have a bachelor party and then they wind up killing the hooker? Yeah, very bad things.
Yeah.
in that vein of things.
Okay.
I think you're probably going to dig it. I thought it was going to be a little bit more lighthearted than it wound up being. Okay. I didn't expect there to be so much, death in the show.
That's funny. Okay. I will definitely report back. I'm very intrigued because the trailer does an effective job of, like, this is my jam. This is kind of like my shit. So, like, at least for me, like, stylistically and tone wise, it felt like it was very much like,
well,
of my,
it's from, of my, it's family. From the Dead to Me, Silver Tree.
Yeah. Okay.
Who did Dead to Me and Flight Attendant, which you have recommended to me a number of times.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure they're the show creator. I could be wrong, but I believe that's why Linda Cardellini is just
that would make
is sense. There. Like, yeah, you know, she was a heavily, you know, she was a big part of that show. This is even darker than that show was. Like, it doesn't have quite. It gets playful, but it's not as playful as that show was.
Okay.
But I think you dig it. So I won't say more about it. We can talk about it when you watch it. The other thing that I watched that you didn't get to go see.
No, I did not.
I went to go see Kraven the Hunter in. Boy.
Did you see it in IMAX?
No.
Okay.
I saw it the cheapest possible way I could see it.
Well, I mean, considering that it's not going to make any money, it'll probably be on VOD, PVOD, Premiere VOD, probably in the next 2 weeks. So I'll be able to get a gander of it.
I'm surprised it's not there today.
Seriously, like, I've heard nothing but bad things about this. Now, okay, so, like, let's set the table. I have a few questions. I already know this, but I always just like to, like, okay, so, like, since for you the standard of bad good movie is Madam Web, or a bad entertaining movie is Madam Web, where does it land on the bad movie scale of Madam Web being, like, apex entertaining and, like, I don't know, fucking, what's the, Joker Ledoudou being, like, bad?
This is more like Joker. This falls more in the Joker territory of, like, kind of boring bad.
Oh, good
and
Lord.
Not in the, like, oh, this is stupid, but I'm having fun with it, so.
So what you're saying is that the best part was the 28 years later trailer of this movie.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
the action scenes are nothing. Like, I'm happy for Aaron Taylor Johnson. I'm glad he got paid. And I hope he's happy with all of the work that he put in to look as good as he does in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But he legit didn't need to go that hard. Like,
especially when your dad is played by Russell Chonk Chonk Russell, or Russell Chonk Crow, which, please, Russell, do not throw a fucking phone at me. Do not try to hit me or anything. I love you, bro. Like, you're my boy. But damn, like, you know, like, talk about, like, father and son not matching, right?
So, spoilers for Kraven the Hunter. This movie tries, like, it feels like a last gasp. Because they try to throw every possible, like, villain in the Spider-Man universe that they can get in here. Like, it's how much, like, if you're a Spider-Man villain and you have an exotic sounding real name, like, mm-hmm. We're going to add you to this. His brother, he has a brother in the movie, and his brother is the Chameleon.
No.
Yes. They repeatedly bring up Dr. Miles Warren, who is the guy that cloned Spider-Man.
Yeah.
We have this new version of the Rhino. Calypso. Is played by not Calypso is like in the
clothes, right?
Yeah, and okay. She's with Kraven, so like that's not really outside of the realm of like what would be in a Kraven movie, but and there's several others. There's a character, a nothing character named the Foreigner, but he has this like power to like hypnotize you. It's a strange pull, and it's just the movie makes no sense at all. there is an eight minute opening sequence is on YouTube right now.
Yes.
And if you go watch that, then you have seen Kraven, because it's just more of that.
Oh man. Okay. I mean, like it's weird because it's like at this point, is anybody rooting for Sony, or are we all just sitting?
I mean,
here?
The rumor is that they are officially putting a lid on them trying to expand on any of these characters, and that Feige and company will oversee all of that outside of the Spider-Verse movies.
I really hope so. Which
Sony doesn't, you know, they're letting somebody else take the reins on that too. So,
yeah.
You know.
I really hope so, because like I almost want them to just like make a deal with Marvel and say, as long as you never, like, as long as you let us control the games, the video games, we'll let you have back Spider-Man. And just in perpetuity, the Sony will always have have exclusive rights to Spider-Man as a video game character. Because, like, what it always does for me, these movies, is just reaffirm my notion that Sony movies has no fucking clue what they are doing, but Sony video game or PlayStation knows absolutely what they're doing. Because literally last year we had Kraven as a villain within Spider-Man. Well, no, this year, fucking, what the fuck am I talking about? This year we had him, or was it last year? I cannot remember. Jesus.
I got my PS5 earlier this year, mm-hmm. and I got to play Spider-Man, so it would have been end of last year, beginning of this year.
Yeah, this year. That's right. You're 100% right. We had a villain last year in Kraven, and he was...
most of the characters we've seen this year from Sony were characters in that game.
Right? Like, Jesus.
Two big ones, Venom and Kraven.
Kraven. And they managed to do better versions in the games than they ever did in the movies. Though I know that there are a lot of fans of Tom Hardy's Venom, and he's entertaining, but, you know.
Well, I mean, we watched it a few months ago, I don't think either one of us hated it. We didn't love it, but this is just, like... There's no after credit sequence. So that in and of itself feels like...
Tells you everything you need to know.
Like, hey, yeah, we know this is it. Like, there's no way they didn't have something for it. But, like, so the whole thing with the chameleon, like, pretty early on, they established, like, this relationship between him and his brother. And his brother keeps doing voices, and they're clearly dubbed with, like, he keeps doing their dad specifically, and it's clearly Russell Crowe, like, like dubbing over like whatever he's saying. And so, like, by the end of the movie, he's like, you know, you always told me I was a chameleon, and now I really am one. And like, he's taken this drug to like be able to change his features, and it's just all such a waste. The thing with the rhino makes almost no fucking sense at all. It's baffling how they get to he has a skin condition, that's what it is, and he has to constantly take these meds to keep it from getting out of control, and it will get out of control super quick and make his skin really hard, like a rhino. And which, okay, but it doesn't explain why you mysteriously grow horns on the top of your head, but whatever. The Calypso thing, it's so half-assed, like, the most half-assed romance I've ever seen in a superhero movie. And that's saying something, because most superhero films half-ass the hell out of their romances. But do you want to guess, like, take a stab at how Kraven gets his powers?
I have no idea. Is he dumped into a vat of radioactive juice? I have no idea. Like,
I mean, look, this is Sony, so and this is the Spider-Man universe.
If Spider-Man
gets his powers from a radioactive spider, Then yeah. Kraven should get his powers from a radioactive lion.
Oh my god, are you kidding me?
It's not radioactive, it's voodoo, but it's the same thing.
Jesus Christ. Oh,
he gets bitten. He gets almost eaten to death by a lion when his dad takes him out on a safari. And this voodoo magic stuff like gets poured, mixed in with his blood and the lion blood. And he wakes up in the hospital after he died for 3 minutes. And he's got, you know, lion powers. So...
Oh, Jesus Christ. And because he's a lion, he is the king of the jungle. And so he becomes the apex predator.
Well, there's this whole, like, subplot of... So he hunts people who would do harm to nature. And mm-hmm. that's kind of interesting, but... What winds up happening is his brother gets kidnapped, and then he goes after his brother, and then he has to fight the rhino, and all it winds up being is a test by his dad. His dad arranged the whole thing to put him to the test to see if he was the ultimate hunter, and he passed the test. And it's just absolute bullshit. Like, it's so stupid. Yeah, don't watch this movie. It's not fun. There may be a version that exists that's not terrible.
Uh-huh.
But this one isn't it. There was much like Madam Web, but not in a like what the fuck is happening kind of way. There are yeah. clear overdubs and cut arounds of things that were originally in there, and they had to change it or wanted to change it to try to fit into some narrative they thought that they were trying to create. You know what I'm talking about? Like in Madam Web yeah. has all the like weird cuts where people are talking, but the camera's like pointed at a window or something. Where it's like you just recorded dialogue and just inserted a shot of a camera like not pointed at the person talking. What is happening? There's some stuff like that, not as much as Madam Web, but I don't know. Maybe there's a version of this movie that didn't absolutely, like, just shit the bed. But, I mean...
Probably not. Probably not.
good for him for getting paid and looking like he does. Because, you know... And the big reveal at the end, other than his father was pulling the strings the whole time, is, you know, he kills his dad, and what he gets is... A vest. Kraven's vest. Yeah.
That's the...
Jeez. Like, it ends with him, like, sitting on this, like, makeshift throne with the vest and, like, staring into the camera, and it's like, okay, I hope we're really done with all this.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know, like... Yeah, we really need, like, Sony just really needs to stop this. Like, just stop it. Like, just stop. Like, who decided, like, who's the numbnuts that thought that it was a good idea to do this, like, at all? Like, and the worst part is that there's probably, because of the screenwriter Richard Wenk is involved, like, he's the guy who wrote the Equalizer trilogy, a trilogy that I really do like and adore, because it gets the property right. Like, I'm fairly certain, and probably in the script origin, like in the script version of Kraven, is probably a halfway decent movie. So much so that, I mean, I heard, like, the rumor was that Antoine, like, Wenk wanted Antoine Fuqua to direct Kraven yep. the Hunter. And he decided to do, like, Equalizer 3, to which I'm like, okay, well, I mean, Denzel or some like, half-assed white dude. English white dude that you don't know? Yeah, you're gonna do Denzel. I mean, I would. I mean, like, I would do the Denzel movie before anything, right? Because it's Denzel. And he's worked with him, like, 8 times. But I guarantee you, studio interference and all those numbnuts in Sony, the Sony executives, really fucked this, screwed the pooch on this one. And, you know, maybe they should all lose their jobs. Like, to be perfectly honest, like, they have dumped hundreds of millions of dollars into these wanky, janky-ass... Like, and I'm including the Venom ones, because as much as we find them entertaining, they are trash.
Oh, yeah.
Like, as much, like, they've spent hundreds of millions of dollars and lost a lot of money. Like, the only reason why they have anything is because those Venom films, like, came out at the right time when we were so starving for movies, especially the second one. The second one I went back and rewatched, that's a terrible...
Yeah.
The first one is fun. The second one
is... The second one's rough, man.
It's terrible. And so, like, to me, it's like, okay, well, yeah, everybody really should lose their job here for this stuff, because it's just terrible, and I'm glad that they're closing the book on it finally. And like, let's just not try to do let's just not try to do any... I mean, like.
Worldwide, yeah. The third Venom movie took in half of what the first Venom movie did. Yep. Like, worldwide box office. I mean, the first one's 856, and the third one is 460 or something like that. Yep. That's a hell of a drop. I mean, even the second one only took in 500. So yeah, that's really rough, and
it really is. And
Madam Web, let's see,
made no money. I think
$100 million worldwide, and I mean, Craven, I think, will be lucky to do in that range worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's. I can see why they might quietly just shutter this whole thing and figure out some other arrangement with Marvel. Because Tom Holland won't out at some point.
Yeah, he will. Like, I mean, they signed him for another trilogy, which means that they've got him for 3 more films, which brings him probably into his mid-30s. And at that point, he will probably want to leave. Like, I would not be surprised if he, like, 6 films is a lot. Like, yeah. that's more than anybody, right? And the only reason why RDJ will probably have the king of Marvel with the appearances is because his new contract.
Yeah.
And
I mean, he's not even, you're talking about film. 6 star where, like, you're the star. The I know star. You can argue, like, he shares the first one with RDJ, but, like, mm-hmm. they're his yeah. movies. Nobody else has 6 movies. Thor has 4, and that was one yeah. too many. So,
yes.
Cap has 3, Iron Man has 3. Like, Guardians have 3, but that's not a solo project. No, yeah, nobody has 6. So,
no.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what that turns into. I know we all know it's going to be Miles. Like, that's going to be the next yeah. step. But, yeah.
Oh, God. I fear for that, though. Like, to be perfectly yeah. honest. Like
a live-action Miles? Yeah, that's rough.
Because, I mean, if they can't even complete the fucking trilogy of the animated Miles, which, like, come on, guys. Come on, Sony. Get your shit together. But anywho. So what you're basically saying is that we should stay away from Kraven the Hunter like the plague. The man does not come around.
I mean, it's not making any money, so I feel like everybody's yeah. on board with that.
I like my favorite part about this whole fucking thing is that, like, I was actually looking forward to that Lord of the Rings animated thing, and it's actually making more money than that, which I find very weird. But yeah, you know, whatever. Yeah, like, but I mean, it just goes to show you that Lord of the Rings is kind of a property that has slightly dipped off, and like, you know, maybe not do an animated movie for them, maybe do a live action.
Kind of worn out.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's not as big as it was.
No, but you know, we've heard about the new trilogy that they're doing they got Peter Jackson back. Just find it wild. That's true. I mean, I just find it wild that he wants to bring McKellen back, even though McKellen's like close to 90 years old now. I don't think it's gonna happen.
I just don't think it's gonna happen, man. I mean, if it does, good. I'll be happy to see what comes of it, but you know, remember when Warner Brothers signed a deal with J.J. Abrams and paid him $500 million for, like, his first look thing?
Yeah, and they didn't get anything from him?
We got that Batman the Caped Crusader show that didn't even air on Max. It aired on, they sold it to Prime, which I enjoyed the show, but, I mean, you didn't even keep the thing, the one thing that he gave you. It's kind of like a lot of these deals are starting to feel like that. I'm like, is this just like people, multi-millionaires, billionaires, just like giving each other loans for stuff? Like, what is happening? Because nothing is coming out of so much of this.
You are 100% right. Like, you know how I'm not going to say anything because you know how I feel about JJ. You know how I feel about JJ.
Yeah.
There's probably a couple of properties that I love. I mean, I will forever be grateful for Fringe. I think that we are both Fringe fans. I'm like, you know, when your daughter is doing more work, and I don't like his daughter's music. Like, I don't like it because of him. Like, I'm just sick of him, and I'm sick of the fact that he's getting this money. Meanwhile, like it's almost like my opinion has changed so radically in the last couple of years about him and, like, you know, people at Warner Brothers. Like, so, like, I used to hate Chuck Lorre, but I kind of love Chuck Lorre now because that man's a beast when it comes to working. And like,
he's putting stuff out. Like, even if it's not stuff you like, working. Like, he is collecting the check and doing the work.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Like how is it that he's been able to bring out, like, 18 shows? And by the way, like, I just started watching Bookies. Holy shit, is that a great, funny, weird show?
Yeah, I want to catch up to it.
I don't like, what I love about it is the disgust for degenerate gambling it has. Because it's like, it's very much so that kind of like it's not a show for gamblers. It's for the people that hate gamblers, like that hate the whole thing of gambling. It's very wild. Like, he's a gambler himself. I ended up going down a deep dark hole of like Chuck Lorre-ness because like I was like, you know, he's kind of like. But then I realized, then I started to read about him and understand his kind of life and who he was, and I'm like, that makes so much fucking sense. And then I watched this, like, a lot of it had to do with this show, Bookies. And, man, like, it's like a great kind of low-level hood crime comedy. I'm only halfway through the first season because the second season kind of just started. But just a weird random recommend that Bookies is definitely kind of, like, great. The only way it could probably be better is if he brought his girl Kaylee Cuoco into the show. Like, I can fucking totally see her being in the show somehow. Just because I love Kaylee Cuoco. I love her as an actress. She's kind of great. Did we want to talk just a little bit about that trailer that we got? Speaking of Lorian and Kaylee Cuoco, before we get into the big thing that we were going to talk about.
I don't think I watched the trailer.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, okay. Well, then we'll see. Later, that's fine. But there is a season. They're officially, they have the season, what is it, the season 4 trailer, or is it season 5 for Harley Quinn?
Four.
Four, yeah. So they have the new trailer out. It just dropped. It it definitely looks like a bump up in quality. Like, at least the story that it's telling, I think that they learned their lesson, and it seems like whatever the framing, at least, looks like they went, oh, okay, you didn't like what we did last season, so let's kind of make a quick adjustment. So yeah, but we both watched something last night, and I think, like, unless we have anything else to kind of discuss.
No. Okay. Well, I know you watched Red One, but I don't really, like, no. I don't know why you watched it.
Because I wanted, okay, so let's just, two seconds. Okay, so the best part about the movie is, you know how, like, we talk about The Rock and The Pebble? And, like, how, like, I always talk about The Pebble, and, like, you know, it's, like, the thing that I make fun of. He actually has a power where he shrinks himself. And my wife literally did the Leo DiCaprio, because I call him the Pebble so much. She literally did the Leo thing where she pointed, and I'm like, the Pebble. And we both started laughing because he's like, he's a tiny version, then he grows tiny. He has Ant-Man's power. I will say this much about Red One. I now understand, like, it there was a theory I had, and this is the theory, is The Rock doesn't understand why people love him. We don't love him because he's this badass. And that's what he plays in this. And it's so boring and stupid and just shut the fuck up. It makes me mad, because you get The Rock that we want in Moana 2. And I think, and this is my theory, is that so many people were so starving for Charming Rock, the one that smiles, the one that is a little goofy, tells dad jokes, but is ultimately a badass at the end of the day, like he is as he plays Maui, that they've churned Moana 2 into this supernova of a movie, which it doesn't deserve. It does not deserve to be that movie. Wicked does. And Wicked is making, like, you know, it's still making a killing, and Moana is still making a killing, but Moana does not deserve that. It's a terrible musical. Like, the music sucks so bad, and it's just bad. But the great thing of, like, it's not bad. It's just, it's sequelitis. It just doesn't, it's not as good as the first. But that's the thing that The Rock is missing, is that he doesn't understand what we want from him. We don't want the hierarchy has changed. We don't want that shit. We don't want you to be a tough guy in Red One or Redone. We want you to be the goofy, charming dude from the Jumanji movies and the Rundown and Moana. Like, that's the dude that everybody is rooting for. That's the dude that, you know, we went, like, when he said that he wanted to run for the president, we kind of scratched our chins and went, this motherfucker could do that. Not this one. This one is just fucking, there's a reason why your movie fucking failed. It's because you're so self-serious and so up your own ass that nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. And I don't know who's going to have to tell him that. Like, literally somebody has to tell him, you fucking suck, dude. You fucking suck really hard.
His box office draw has diminished in such a way that I feel like it has to be, like, he has to know. Like, you're not making, none of these movies are making any money. So, yeah. I mean, Red One hit theaters less than a month ago, and it's already streaming on Amazon Prime. I know it's an Amazon movie, so that was kind of, like, bound to happen anyway. But, you know, Amazon's not Netflix where, you know... you don't get any kind of real theatrical run. Like, they've had movies that have had not big tentpole or quote tentpole movies like this, they thought, but they've had movies that had, you know, 2 month theatrical runs before, right? I mean,
yeah. I mean, but also this movie cost $350 million, which I don't see. It's a CGI mess.
It has to be, like, the Netflix model of, we're paying everybody up front, there's no back end deal because there's no real back end.
Yeah.
And that's why I think we've talked about it before, but anybody who doesn't know, when you hear about those Netflix movies costing so much money, that's part of the reason why, is because there's no back-end deals. So you're getting paid all of that money up front. So, like, you hear about RDJ making so much money off his first Marvel contract. All of that was back-end deal. He didn't get paid that much money up front. No. So, like, it's... You know, yeah, it is still weird that they spent this much money on a guy, because this movie, it's not like this movie was in production 7 or 8 years ago.
No,
it's relatively recent, and recent enough so that you could look at Dwayne Johnson's box office and go like, yeah, you're not the draw that you were. So like, I don't know if we should, like, we can't pay you that much money. And certainly Chris Evans is not the draw that he hoped he was, and a lot of people hoped he was. No slight to him. I love him, but
yeah,
like, dude, you're not, that's why he's coming back to Marvel.
Yeah.
So, speaking of Netflix, there is a new movie on Netflix that we both got a chance to watch this. I watched two movies in one day. Do you know the last time that happened?
I
have no idea the last time that happened. That's how long it's been. Years since I watched two movies in one day. I don't even watch that many movies anymore. So two movies in one day. But I had to get the taste of Kraven the Hunter out of my mouth. And I came home, we mentioned it last week, maybe on the podcast, Carry On. The trailer looked a lot of fun. I was definitely interested, even though I'm not a Taron Egerton or whatever the hell his name is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge fan. I think he's fine. Yeah. But some, like, the trailer just grabbed me. And I mentioned it to you, and then I texted you last night. I was like, I'm going to try to watch Carry On. And you're like, yeah, that's what I'm watching tonight.
Yeah. Oh, man. Do you want to go for, we kind of texted back and forth about it. But, man, we were just talking about, how so many people hate, like people are using the word derivative in a bad way, in a way that is weaponized. And sometimes taking things and reconstructing them and creating something out of those origins, out of that love of certain things, works in a way that you like, that just kind of like it gels in all the right ways and all the right places, and it makes something that's highly entertaining. And like, when I say that Carry On is very derivative of certain things, I'm not saying that in a bad way. Like, I'm saying that in the best way possible. It's derivative. Like, it derives certain serums from certain very specific things from the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, it's Die Hard 2 with more of the Die Hardness, and like it's action. It's set at Christmas. There's all the tropes that you think are going to show up in this movie, absolutely show up in this movie, but and there's no real surprise, but there didn't have to be. It was just enjoyable. Like, it hits all the beats it needs to hit to keep you invested in everything. It's less than 2 hours long, and it's a lot of fun. I miss this kind of movie. And here's the thing, man, that blew my mind last night, because I'm watching it and I'm like, who made this? who made this movie? The guy that directed this, his last film was Black Adam. And all I could think about, like, besides the movie, is that Black Adam could have been a good movie then. Like, it wasn't awful, but it just wasn't great. But this guy definitely knows how to make a fun, exciting movie that, you know, carries you through it, that you're invested in. Black Adam could have been that? Question mark? Because this movie is that.
No, absolutely. It totally is. And, well, okay, so, like, the thing is that he made those, like, have you seen his trilogy of Liam Neeson movies?
I don't think I've seen them all. So, it's what, it's Unknown.
Unknown. Nonstop. Runaway. Nonstop.
And then, what's the other one? Oh, The Commuter. The Commuter.
The Commuter, yeah. And Run All Night. There's actually four of them.
Okay.
Run All Night, like, and I will tell you, they're not the same movie, but they are absolutely the same movie. Like, they are 90s thrillers. Like, they're, like, that's literally, like, do you remember when, like, back in the fall and the spring, like, in the 90s, we would get these Warner Brothers and Paramount, like, they were only from Warner Brothers and Paramount. We would get these thrillers starring whoever, Wesley yeah. Snipes, fucking, like, yeah. you know, and that's just what it is. Like, that's, like, it's like this, it's like a mid-budget thriller. And, like, it, how
I
did
mean,
it
it's happen? Not going to end up on, like, any, like, even if I was the guy who made a best of with, it's not yeah. going to end up on my best of list. Like, it's not, but I just wanted to watch something that was entertaining that I could kind of escape into. And, like, this absolutely fits that bill. Scrolling through his thing, didn't scroll back all the way or just scrolled past it last night. Mm-hmm. Also made The Shallows. And,
yep.
Like, which hits that mark of, like, it's less than 2 hours. It's actually, it's not even 90 minutes. It's yeah. exciting. It's gripping. It pulls you in and you're just in this story. And then, like, yeah, you might forget it, you know, 2 weeks later and be like, oh yeah, I did see that. It was really good. But, like, I just wanted an escape, and that's what this is. And everybody does a absolutely bang up job. Like, mm-hmm. it's well cast. I totally buy Taron Egerton as, like, Joe Schmo American dude.
mm-hmm. like, yeah, even though he's so British, it's like he's like, you know, I come from New Jersey. Bullshit, you came from New Jersey. But you know what? I'm gonna let it. Like, your American is okay. Like, your kung fu is so-so, right? But it works. Like, you know what I appreciated about him was he wasn't a buffed out, like, superhero. Like, he gave, like, and don't take this the wrong way, but he gave Harrison Ford vibes. If that makes sense. Like, Harrison yeah. Ford from The Fugitive. Like, a dude that is competent, and I like the fact that he was a runner. Like, it kind of, like, you know what it was? It was when Tom Cruise was making, like, The Firm in the 90s, where, like, his superpower was running. Like, that's yeah. literally what Taron Egerton is. Like, he was, like, the 90s version of a hero, which was just an average dude, an average elevated dude. Like, maybe.
And they do the whole thing, and we're like, it's the Schrodinger's, like, gun thing, where, like, everything yes. that comes up early on, like, comes back into play. Like, I mean, spoilers for the movie, but, like, early on, he gets that gun, and the guy, and Jason Bateman tells him, like, don't fire it too quickly. It's a plastic gun. It'll just melt and explode in your hand. And exactly. Then when old buddy's like chasing him through the baggage area and then just firing willy-nilly, I'm like, that gun's going to explode. Like,
yep.
It's very, but it's not like ham-fisted and hokey and like it plants all those things. And like him being a runner, like it does it, and like, oh yeah, of course he used to run track or whatever, but like it's relevant to the story, like it adds that layer to it, you know. Even weird things like spiking the dude's coffee, but that's the dude that's always their designated driver because he never drinks, you know, just stuff like that. It plays in that sandbox, and it doesn't pretend to be anything other than like, we're going to play with all the toys. You know what's going to happen, but, you know, we're going to make it exciting and you're going to have a good time, you know. But there are truly, like, thrilling moments in it that kind of catch you off guard. Most of those come from Jason Bateman,
who's fantastic. Like who would have thought that Jason Bateman would end up becoming like this great character actor and also great great like director and star of things. It's just fantastic. He's just fantastic. Hold on one second. Can I hold on? Can I hold on for a second?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Logan?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? I'm so sorry. My dog's vet called and I had to take it because there was some issues that we had to get blood work done. So I'm so sorry about that.
That's good.
Okay. All right. Hold on. Let me make sure that I can over. Can you still hear me, sir?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. But where were we? What were we talking? Like, I know that we were talking about
carry on and just what a fun, good time it was. I don't understand why it didn't. It should have got a theatrical release. Like, this would have been such fun in the theater.
Yes.
And I actually, while you stepped away for a second, I didn't look at the writer on the thing last night. Do you know who this guy is that wrote it?
Yes, actually I do. He's a writer. Okay, so TJ Fixman, and like with some additional work by Michael Green, but he actually is a gaming writer. He writes
mostly for Ratchet and Clank.
Which absolutely makes sense about the clockwork nature of the screen.
Yeah.
Which is the thing that I liked most about it is like, you know, like what we were talking about, like, you know, like Schrodinger's gun. It's all this stuff. Like the instant, my favorite part about it was the instant Logan Marshall Green shows up as Agent Alcott, you know, he's a plant.
Yeah. You know, he's a plant. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, but at the same time, it's like, okay, so like, how are they going to reveal this and how are they going to have something? And then it becomes one of the most like the. One of the most
what
fun,
an exciting, like, yeah, it's unlike like I've talked a lot about the fight scene in the car in Deadpool and Wolverine,
yes.
Which feel like it's obviously choreographed but like you're filming in the tight spaces and I know there's some CGI there, but like it's not like it looks so real. This has that like unreal quality to it where you know that they use some like tricky camera work and like heavy CGI to create this like drastic fight in the car, but it's so tense and well done that like I was on the edge of my seat. I was like, oh god.
Absolutely. And then the fact that they like it's one of the best uses of Last Christmas by Wham. Like it's just it's great. I love that it doesn't pretend to be anything other than what it is. And but the fact that they know that and they go so deep into that knowing, like, I mean, you know,
they even cast, you cast Dean Norris.
Yes. And
as the head of like this security force, but then the head of the terminal, you cast Benito Martinez, who's like the security director of the terminal. Director. And it's just like, of course these two guys are in it. Like, I can't tell you the last thing I saw Benito Martinez in.
Like, it was probably a TV show for me. Like, to be perfect. It's like The Shield. I think it was probably The Shield. Like, literally,
I mean,
the
last season of The Shield. No. But yeah, it's just, it's so much fun. And we were talking about Jason Bateman and like how everything that's truly surprising in the movie kind of just comes from him. And I think that comes with casting him in this specific role because he's not like a Jason Bourne badass.
No.
And like the fight in the he and Taron Egerton get into in the restroom, like you expect Taron Egerton to have the advantage. But that's what makes it so like, oh shit, like when he does, you know, certain things and gets the upper hand. So
no, absolutely. Or like Theo Rossi playing like the sniper guy. Like,
yeah, and then you have the other side of that, the good guy, not sniper, but kind of version of that is Josh Brenner,
who
plays her little like man in the chair. You know, they're both playing like the man in the chair, and it's like the, you know, the twerpy little dude from Silicon Valley, and then, you know, Theo Rossi, who just has never not looked menacing and sinister, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. And then with that little weird mustache that he has, like in this movie, with the glasses, it's just like, man, you're a creep. You've always been a creep, but you're especially a creep here.
I mean, I don't think he had the mustache in The Penguin, and he was still creepy.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was. Like, you know, talk about like rising up again at the right time, like character, like, you know, character actor Theo Rossi. Again, another guy from a Kurt Stutter production. Like, he was in, what's the one? The biker one.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I didn't really watch it. Yeah, Sons of Anarchy. So. Yeah,
so, like, you've got all these FX actors that are showing up. But it's, like, it's a lot of fun. Like, it's proficient at what it does. It doesn't try to be anything else than what it is. And I know that sounds like a dig, but I'm going to say that it's not a dig. Like, there's something to be said about a movie that understands where it's coming from, what its style is, and the things that it's referencing, right? Because it's a Christmas movie. It's a Christmas-based action movie. But it takes place in L.A. And so it has a very specific style. And for a movie that wasn't filmed in L.A., me being an Angeleno and knowing LAX and knowing what they're doing, they do a pretty damn good job of faking it, like, you know, in all senses of the word, or in all senses of the of like the production design and everything. It's just like, I was genuinely surprised at how much tension and entertainment I got out of this movie. Like, it's like, it in a lot of ways, like, I just recently watched Conclave, the Italian, or the Pope movie, the Pope Vote movie.
Yeah.
And I tell you, that fucking movie is like top 10 for me. Like, I was genuinely shocked. But it's also a movie that understands the movie it is, and doesn't try to be anything else than that movie, and do it to the best of its ability. And it's a very much of a throwback to a certain kind of thriller, like this one is. And like, for me, I think we've talked about this recently, where it's like, we kind of like, I kind of want the big box office to crash. I want that big box office crash because we're going to get more movies like this and Conclave. And if you can give me 15 of these a year and 15 Conclaves at the quality level, like that's the difference between the 90s and now, was that we year round had quality movies. We did, like, and they were well made. They weren't lazy, because neither one of these movies is lazy. And I know that sound, again, that sounds like a dig, but we were just talking about Redone, Red One. I know. That's a lazy fucking movie. That is a super lazy movie that relies on CGI. None of the, either one of the, like this one, like it has CGI in it, but it doesn't rely on it. It relies on its stars and expects you to like have like a human interaction with them. And yeah, and it's a wild.
And it moves. Like it's that quick pace. Like, again, like this guy knows how, I don't want to pronounce his name because I'll fuck it up, but Colette Serra is his last name.
Yeah.
He's from Spain, but like he knows how to keep it going. Like he understands like that kind of narrative structure. Like nothing ever, like if it's lingering, it's like it's for a reason. Like there's not a lot of like long drawn out like shots. There's not a lot of, there's some clunky exposition, but it's the clunky movie exposition where you know, you're, somebody brings up random facts about somebody that come into play later, but I mean that's movies, you know.
Yeah,
and like you don't need the origin story of why he can run so fast. It's just in passing somebody says something about, oh yeah, he ran track in college or something. It's just, I don't know, it's an appreciation for movies like you're saying that really don't exist anymore, and that's a damn shame. I'm full on board with like following this dude, this director's career now, because he's made so many movies that, like, again, not ever gonna be on my list of favorites, but movies where I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that, I had a good time watching that. And so like outside, as long as he doesn't make any more superhero movies with The Rock, then, because I hadn't seen the other movie he did with The Rock either, but Jungle Cruise? Yeah, I haven't seen that.
It's fun. This is a Colette Serra touch. The movie's theme is a Metallica song. Like,
okay,
that should be enough to get you. Like, it's basically Pirates with The Rock and Emily Blunt, but the theme songs for the theme song is like it's wild. Like, it's one of those movies that at first you think, man, this is a crappy ass movie, but then it becomes this whole thing where it's like, I don't know, man, like it's wild that it just understands its what it's doing, and it's kind of a little wonky, but at the same time it's so arch and so kind of weirdly fun that you can't help but kind of love what it's doing. I won't tell you which one. I won't tell you which famous, super, super famous Metallica song it is. You have to kind of like discover it for yourself. But it's on Disney Plus, and it's a lot of fun. The thing that I am excited about is, do you know that he is actually doing the remake of Cliffhanger?
Oh, no, that is exciting. Speaking of movies that they just don't make anymore.
Exactly. And, like, you know who the cast is, right? Who the, like, they've recontextualized it. But basically, Lily James and Pierce Brosnan play father and daughter. And it's kind of like the same concept, but instead of it being about two friends that have to reconnect, it's about a father and a daughter having to reconnect and save themselves and stuff. So, I'm actually kind of excited that this is actually it's actually in production. It's going to happen.
I saw the announcement the other day about Pierce Brosnan. I scrolled past and I was like, oh, okay. Well, I don't know why you would remake that movie, but sure. Okay.
Yeah. I think that this one is going to be a sleeper hit for them. Like, as soon as more people start watching it and go, you know what, give this one a chance. This is going to be like one of those Netflix things that everybody is going to start talking about because it's just so, how can you not make, like, I always feel like the cream always rises to the top, right? Like, a movie that is this well made and this entertaining will not be in the top three or even the number one movie by Christmas time. Because it's just so well executed. It's not that hard to beat anything on Netflix right now, except for shows. It's a lot of fun, man. Like, I was genuinely surprised. It instantly made me want to do is go, okay, so like now I have to find all of my Sierra directed movies, because I think I own all of them because they were like $5 purchases. Like, do you know what I mean? Like I saw them at my used Blu-ray store and it was $4.99. It's like $4.99. I haven't seen this movie. Let's go ahead and buy it. I mean, it's $5. If it's bad, it just stays in my collection forever, collecting dust. So now I have to go find them all because I know that I have them all because he's the king of the $5 Blu-ray for me, just to watch them again. Because they're this professionally made.
Yeah, it's more like this, just more like this, not you know, cookie cutter clone of this. Just more movies like this, please. And at the box office, like, I want to go to the theater, spend less than 2 hours there, have my popcorn and my soda and my candy, and like be like, oh, that was a good time. Not 2.5 hours, 3 hours of my life and just being like, what am I doing, man?
Yeah, you don't
I would watch Craven at home and this in the theater. Instead, I watch Craven in the theater and this at home.
like, you know what? I'm tired of films trying to change the hierarchy of whatever the fuck. I just want a movie. Like, and this is what it is. Like, at its best, this is just a movie. But you know what? Sometimes a movie, that's okay. Like literally that's okay. Like, I was thinking about it and I was like, fuck, that was a movie. Like, just like Conclave, like the end of Conclave, I went, fuck, that was a movie. Like, and I rarely say that nowadays because everything has to be transformative, right? Like it either is shit or it's gold. Like, there's no in between. Like, people, like, okay, so I'm gonna say something that's like very baseball-y, but it makes sense. Like, the Dodgers didn't win by home runs. They won the World Series by manufactured runs, doubles, singles. Like, yes, the home runs mattered, but what really mattered at the end of the day was that every game that they played for 162 games, they manufactured runs. The doubles, the singles and the doubles were things that they got people on base. And like, I feel like in movies, we only have grand slams now. We don't even care about the doubles or the singles or getting on base. And it can't always be the grand slam. It can't be Freddie Freeman walking off, right? It has to be, you know, it has to be Mookie getting on base or getting a triple and stealing, or getting a single and stealing second. And that's what this kind of movie is. This movie is like a single but it turns into a double or even a triple because the legs are super fast, or like, you know, you're able to steal second going into or you're able to steal third going into second, right? I want more of that. And that, like, and maybe people, like, hopefully smarter people within the industry will start seeing that trend and start doing that, because Jesus Christ, like, I can't, like, I thought about it. I was like, I'm extremely tired of everything having to be an epic, because it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Just a fun, good time. And it doesn't have to be like life changing. Oh, this is, you know, adapted from some. It's like, oh yeah, wouldn't it be fun to just have this story? And, you know, you write it, you put it out there in the world. It's fast paced. It's, yeah, it's just a good time. And like, I really, really appreciated that. And it, especially when I saw it was under 2 hours, I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, it's just under 2 hours, but with minus the 8 minutes of credit, it's like an hour 50. But you will not be disappointed in how quick it moves.
It moves so fast. I could, and it keeps you pulled in. Like, no point. I can't tell you how many times I looked at my phone at Craven, but I think the only thing I texted you once during the movie when I was halfway through, and I was like, this is so good.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what you told me. Like, and then that was it. Like, I texted you a couple of more things, and that was it. Like, after that, we were just like, I was just like, I'm going to let him enjoy it because he's only at the halfway point. And there's so much, like, the best part about it is that there's so much more. Like, you get to a certain point and you're like, there can't be more, because you're so exhausted from like how quickly it runs. But then you're like, oh, I've got another hour of this. And then it kind of gets you excited that you have another hour of it, because it doesn't ever get lazy. And that's the best part about the movie, is that it never gets lazy. It never just sits there and goes, oh, we're going to just do this thing. It's always got an extra bump. Like, it always has an extra bump to whatever it's doing. Like the Die Hard referenced, like, you know, conveyor belt scene, like, you know, the Schrodinger's gun, like, it's not just one thing. It, like, it makes it a meal, because it also sets up the ending, because of the main bad guy and Taron's character, and like how they end up like in the maze together and what he does, like, and man, talk about a great ending. Like, the perfect ending for a bad guy. The Hans Gruber-ish of it all, right? Like, he gets exactly what you want him to get. And how it's done, like, slow clap. Like, I literally sat there and I was like, fuck that. Like, I literally sat there and just clapped. It was just by myself and I was clapping. I was like, fuck yeah, dude. You did it. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's just, it's wonderful, man. Like, it is like, it is like it's an entertaining, it's entertaining business. Like, it comes in, it knows what it wants, or knows what it wants to do, and it delivers. Like, I don't know how many movies I've watched this year where it was like, there was always something that I was like, it didn't really deliver. Or something held back from it being like truly like I set to do A, B, and C, and I hit A, B, and C, which it did, you know? Yep. And I can't say anything more than that.
Yeah. If nothing else, go watch Carry On this week. It's a great Christmas movie.
Yes, it is. And then watch Dark 2 with it, because it's like the perfect double feature.
I have no idea what the plan for next week is. Presumably we'll both have seen all of No Good Deed, so we'll definitely be talking about that. So until then, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, including, if you want to hear me talk even more about Skeleton Crew, we recorded something on the first two episodes, And we're recording again tonight with a special guest, our buddy Tim Donaldson, who was one of the very young, I just drew a blank on what they're called, the Utinis, those guys.
Jawas.
Yeah, he was one of the Jawas in the in A New Hope. We've been friendly with him for a while. He's come on a few times. But he's really loving the Skeleton Crew, and he's like, I'm loving this show. I want to talk about it. I'm like, okay. So, go check out all that stuff over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, the movie aisle. And I will officially say, starting next Friday, we have Logan's Colin Movie Pictures coming back for a three-volume, 6-week run that'll bring us into the new year, which I'm very excited for us to share with you guys. So look out for that. And, you know, you and me and my 4Ks and my reviews, my home video reviews, though I do have a couple of newer titles, like newer things that I've reviewed. The big one being Demolition Man. Like, I think
saw that. Speaking of movies they don't make anymore.
Exactly. So that one is a truly great 4K. Read my review on it. I think that you will want to buy it. It's actually on sale right now. Not super, super cheap, but well worth the $30 that it is, especially if you're a Demolition Man fan, because the transfer, ooh, Nelly. And they got a quite a bit amount of good special features on it. So I have a couple of more things like that are going to be coming down the pipeline. Some more 4Ks that people should be getting excited about. So with that, we'll be back next week talking about whatever. We'll let it be a surprise.
we'll see you guys then. Number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Cal, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that has stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, we are all together here with me now. Nerds.